pretty good friends, and he was after me for a few years, and finally, you know, I told him I had to quit making excuses and just go, and it was absolutely worth it. I think the first devotional was Judd's, and he talked about digging ditches and just having faith, and ultimately you'll be provided for. And I think a lot of this trip, it's an impact trip. It's not necessarily a mission trip. And hi, babe. And you know, being where your feet are was a common theme. They talk about that, the impact staff, and you know, it was definitely worth it to be where your feet are and have faith and to be impacted yourself, but also know that you're having an impact.
Yeah, my answer is probably like a little different because I obviously don't have a family and kids really, so it was probably easier for me just to leave normal life behind than some of the others, and that was kind of something we talked about as a group, but I also told them it was probably the best week of my life, so take that for what it's worth. But yeah, there's more to it than, you know, when it gets publicized, it's like, well, you know, I have my own work to do here, or I can, you know, help build, or like the picture on the screen, pour concrete here, but there's a lot more to the trip than just the physical labor. That's a lot of what the pictures are. But there's, you know, community and time for yourself. Just you're right off the ocean at the camp, so you get some of your own time there to be in God's creation, but you also then have some group time where you're vulnerable and you share with each other. And for me, I mean, I knew of everybody up here, but actually got to know them a lot better. So there's far more than just the painting and everything that you might generally think of. And I think a lot of us realize that pretty quick. So that's what made it worth it. If anything, you get a sense of refreshment. And it's a week that everything's devoted to the Lord, which doesn't happen hardly ever. So just to experience that alone kind of gives you something to come back to, and may not be reality here for us, but it could be. So that's something I brought back and was encouraged to bring back into my normal everyday life.
Hey, Noah, can you pass the mic this way to Jeff? I'm going to put you on the spot. So one of the things that was just mentioned, it was an impact trip. And I'm having Jeff answer this because we talked about this at length. So if you could briefly explain what your concept of a mission trip and what an impact trip ended up being.
Yeah, so I came into the first meeting and my mindset was always mission trip because I've been on mission trips before, and mission trips were work. You went down there and you worked, and you focused on what you can physically do for others while serving the Lord. And you did it in the Lord's word, but it was more about just the work portion of it. There wasn't much time for reflection or just time together. It was all about work. And so when I mentioned that mission, the word mission trip in the first meeting, Judd stopped me and said, no, this is an impact trip. There's going to be more. It's more about impacting others, but also the impact it has on yourself. And so that's what we truly got the experience with. You know, you'll see some pictures of beaches and everything else. And some might, me personally, I've had it in my mind, well, that's a vacation, guys. This isn't a mission trip. That's a vacation. And I'll be honest, getting to experience what we did over the first few days and then to go in and actually see God's glory in what he provides for us in the world, and really reflect on that, there was more impact in me on this trip than going to Mexico and to you know, another horrible place, Jamaica, and doing mission trips and feeling like I put a lot of work in, but I didn't feel like it came back with nearly as much as I came back from this trip.
Awesome. Any other questions? Yes, Les or Judy. You're one in the same. Yeah, so the question is, do we have an agenda? Do we know what we're going to do? Kind of. there were some things that I thought we were going to get to do that we didn't. And we can kind of go through, if everybody remembers day to day, what we did. But one of the things we've done in the past years is went to a hydroponics farm and helped them harvest, because July is kind of the end of their harvest and they tear everything down before hurricane season comes. But it's been so hot and dry down there this year that harvest had already happened. So we didn't get to go there this year. And usually they try to break up our work days, but this year, the way it played out, does anybody remember why we spent 3 days at Michael Smith's house? Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody that's nodding their head yes can tell that story. People are tired of hearing me talk.
So with Michael Smith's house, of course, that was Michael, that was Craig, and that was Miss Amanda. And about a week before we got down there, their mother had passed away. And so they were getting ready for a celebration of life event to bring people over to be able to talk about their mother. And so it was a big push to try to have this house ready for them to be able to do that there, for it to be special for them, to be able to kind of capstone their mother's life with the start of their new life with the new house all set up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so when Chelsea came up during the service, we kind of showed that before and after picture. I don't know if Adam can find those, but when we showed up on Wednesday, what the house looked like, knowing that they had community and family coming. So this is before. And so imagine having family and your community coming to mourn the loss of a loved one. And then 3 days later, you get to invite them into this. It was huge. And they had a big tent in their front yard, and it was just fun to drive by there and see people just walk up like, wow.
Well, and this is missing the huge change on the inside, too. The yeah. Before and after the inside are just incredible as well, with all the hard work that everyone was doing there as well. So,
and somebody explain what the backyard was like. If you can, explain what the backyard was like.
So I'm not sure if there had been anything picked up since the storm in 2019, but this isn't stuff you're knocking down with a lawnmower. I mean, you needed a machete or something to get through it. But the farther you got into it, just the more trash and debris. And we filled probably a 60-yard roll-off dumpster the first day of just, you know, household appliances that were probably in the house when the hurricane came through. And then just debris and a lot of just garbage. We probably could have filled two or three more of those had we had more time. We focused on both sides of the house and the back, just kind of opening that up. There was just, a lot of junk and garbage stuff. We probably, you'd think that it would be really easy to get in there and just get that stuff out. But like Judd said earlier, there's just really nowhere to go with this stuff. And I don't think most people don't have access to get a roll-off dumpster stuff like that in there on a real easy thing to do.
Yeah, Adam, if you could find, there's a picture of a backyard that looks like it's kind of been mowed a little bit. If you can find that, we can. So when we got there, we had to paint the house, was one of our jobs. And the weeds and the trash were piled clear up to the house. So where you can see the weed stop, that went clear up to the house. There was no backyard whatsoever. And like Jake was saying, there was debris left from the hurricane in 2019. There was stuff that, you know, there's not really a landfill, so to speak. So if anything in your house broke or you were tired of it, you just literally threw it in the backyard. And so we had to clean it up before we could even get to the house to paint it. And it was muddy and it was dirty. There were some people that learned that cockroaches fly at the end of their life. Just some of the things we dealt with as we cleaned it up. Any other questions?
When the other impact teams go, yep. Do they go to the same area or do they go to different areas around?
So the question was, when other teams go, do they go to the same places or other places? Anybody want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, so we were actually working on three different houses when we were there. I think what they say, they completed 42 so far, many hands had. But I think they always have different houses that are kind of in different stages. So they don't start any homes from, the ground up. Most of these are structures that were concrete walls or that were still somewhat standing. So might do interior walls or put a roof on it, but I don't think that they've done any that were full from the ground up homes. But yeah, you can kind of tell the different houses you went to over the last 2 years. You kind of noticed that, you know, some of them, like last year, we were finishing some framing and getting ready for flooring, putting interior doors and light fixtures in. And other ones are more in the earlier stage where they needed sheetrocked and floor leveling. Mm-hmm. But this year, like, we had two different houses we were putting flooring in that were closer to complete. I would say exterior-wise, they were basically done. And then, yeah, Michael Smith's house really just needed painted and cleaned up.
Yeah. So there were 18 of us, and then the Sorheims, a family from Pella. So there was the adults and then four kids were kind of our, I don't know, chaperones, leaders, for lack of a better term. So when we showed up, Scott kind of stayed behind. So there were 23 of us showing up at this house. And, you know, when you think about Craig, who's blind, just sitting in his living room hearing 23 people running around singing and dancing and working and having no idea what anything around him was happening. So we ended up splitting up. Tyler, you can probably speak into, I just drew a blank on it, Miss Tamara. Yeah, if you want to talk a little bit about what we did at her house and the house across the street.
The first half day we were all at Michael Smith's house, and then the group split. The smaller group of us went to Tamara's house, who had an incredible hurricane story. But at her home, we had to clear out, you know, what furniture they did have, and start to do floor level. Or I think her house had been basically completely ripped off the foundation during the hurricane, and many hands had a company come in and do block walls. They were living within the block walls with basically no finishes inside the house. So I think Judd, Jonah, and I and a couple others went in and cleared the furniture out, did floor level order, and started prepping it for a finished floor, subfloor, and a snap together flooring. And the house across the driveway, similarly, it was a wood frame structure on piers, but we did the underlayment. I think you primarily worked over there, and then the snap together flooring there as well. One thing about those houses, and Jonah and I talked about this, and he shared a little bit, but you know, you go in to these homes and there's mattresses on the floor, a handful of clothes in the closet, Tupperware in the corner with some food in it, and a deep freeze with maybe a little bit of quarter full of food. You know, that's the extent of their belongings. And yet they show up and they're just full of joy, full of life, and just so gracious that you're there to do what little we do in mm-hmm. the few days that we're there. They're just mm-hmm. so grateful for that, which is really humbling. A huge, huge takeaway for me on the trip. You know, they, like Judd said it earlier in his sermon, that everybody has a story. And seeing the trash around the homes is like, well, why don't they just work at that and pick that up? You know, we have a different mindset here. But when you start to understand their means and the challenges that they face, yet they're so grateful for what they have and just thank God every day and for their family, for us being there, and for everything that they have. You know, they got a house that was wiped off the face of the earth. They're paying a mortgage on. They may or may not live there, and they may or may not have a mattress with sheets on it even. So they're just so humble, so grateful. You got to think, to take trash out, take it to the landfill, that costs money. To have your septic tank or your holding tank cleaned out, that also yeah. costs money. So they're utilizing other methods yeah. to maybe get by in life while working two jobs and paying a mortgage on a house that may or may not exist.
Yeah, So to have your septic tank pumped out, like you said, costs money. So we found several instances where you just don't connect the pipe to the tank. Then you don't, doesn't cost you anything. So if you would hand it to Miss Terry.
I was going to talk about Amanda.
Okay.
And that resonated for me because I have a daughter named Amanda, and she talked about her story, and then she talked about coming back around from her crazy days, and that she had a job, but she had no way of getting there, so she would walk several blocks away to be picked up to take to her job because she was ashamed of her house. And I thought that was the motivation to work really hard because of that personal story right there. So
yeah,
that was a cool part.
So Miss Tara, you didn't take much convincing to go on this trip. But just share your thoughts of how you were impacted.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was most encouraging, so Abaco is considered a second world nation, but they are also a Christian nation, which was really amazing to see firsthand. So we had a chance to go to their youth group, and then we also went to church on Sunday. But there were hundreds to choose from. There are so many different churches on the island. And I love that they are boldly declaring Jesus. Like when we were speaking with the young adults and some of the older teenagers, they didn't just use, like they knew scripture, but they didn't just use it formally. They were living it out loud and they were speaking it into each other. And it was just so encouraging to see how they really do just speak the name of Jesus over one another, and they are so hopeful, and they are have such hearts of gratitude in wanting to follow Jesus, and they didn't care about materialism. They didn't care about being in a hurry or being busy. Actually, that was one really cool thing. They didn't have speed limits. Everybody just moseys on down the road. There aren't accidents. It was kind of amazing.
Island time is real.
Yeah. So they truly just are like, we have what we have, and Jesus has given it to us, and we're so grateful. And there was a moment where we went to kind of more touristy area, and there were people pulling in these yachts, and it was just a much different environment. And my heart actually kind of broke for the people in the touristy spots because you could tell that they were just living their best worldly life. Whereas a lot of the world looks down on this Bahamian nation that looks so poor and so impoverished, and yet they're the ones who truly are so close to Jesus.
So on Saturday, we got to do what they call a culture day. And so you go about the island. I mean, we worked in Marsh Harbor where the majority of the devastation happened, but then they take you to the other end of the island where it was, for the most part, unaffected. And so you get to see God's beauty in these. I mean, you've seen them in the pictures. The beaches and the ocean are unbelievable. One of the moments that kind of caught me unexpectedly is we were walking back from this beach, Winding Bay is called, and you walk right by this PGA golf course that's just meticulous. And this couple were coming down this path in a golf cart, clearly lost. Like they took a wrong turn in Albuquerque or something, because, and they got stuck in the sand. And as we walk by, we shove them out of the sand and send them on their way. And I catch myself thinking, I don't know how those dummies got so lost. They got stuck in the sand. And I walked a little ways, and then I realized, like, the Bahamian people would look at that as, yeah, we got stuck, but God provided 23 people to push us out of the sand. And it was just how they look at life so differently than we do. Any other questions?
What are you bringing back?
Hmm.
What's changed you that you're bringing back to your personal life, to your community, to your church?
So the question was, other than a sunburn, what did you bring back with you? Miss Becky, you've been silent. This isn't your first trip.
Okay, I think probably the biggest thing on both of the trips that I have brought back to me is praying. Mm. Praying every day for the team of 18 here, and then also the team that I went on in 23. I still pray for them every day. And I think it's just enlightened me spiritually to be able to see, like Tara said, how incredibly spiritual the Bohemians are. Because, I mean, I feel like a total infant compared to them because they are just so outright and so gracious and so spiritual towards everything. And it just glows from them. It's so natural. And it's just like, I just want to be able to grow to that level. And it's with everyone here has supported that within me and developed it in me to be able to be a little bit more spiritual. And I think that that's what has impacted me so much.
Yeah, I guess I would say that we kind of talked about it as a group, but it's really all you're exposed to is just being in the presence of the Lord, and you're kind of on like a spiritual high, I think is how Judd referred to it, but like I said, that's not necessarily what it's like typically. So we just talked about how we can kind of bring that back, and even if it's just small things, he used, like, you're drinking out of a fire hose down there. When you get back, if you can, you know, take small or big gulps every day, you're going to be about the same as what that week was. So kind of just having that perspective coming back and understanding that it's not necessarily going to happen instantly, but trying to work towards that just in our lives and the people we're around. But then the other thing is, like, I know a lot of us there, we got pushed out of our comfort zone when we went and did food distribution, and you're praying with people you've never met, and it's stuff that would seem really daunting here, and we would probably avoid, at least for me. But it's kind of like it's practice, and it's easier to do there because, like I just explained, and you're probably never going to see them again unless you go back, maybe. So it just seems easier. But it, I guess, kind of made me realize it's not that hard to do here, and it's a realistic thing. So bringing that back has helped me grow since being back, and it's something I kind of want to personally keep working toward. So that's kind of where you can bring back small pieces of a bigger picture from things you learn there.
Yeah, so you can pass that down this way. So there was a picture that was up there a minute ago, and I'm in the middle of these two ladies giving them a hug, and that was Miss Saunders. We got to work on her home last year, and it was so fun to go back and see it completed and just to see the absolute joy and pride that they carry. And it's fun to have the relationship, too, because we drove by, and then we ended up having to walk back up the street, and I yelled at her, and she was like, hi, didn't realize who it was, and I got up there, and she said, oh, dear Lord, he came back. But it was just fun to have that relationship kind of renewed.
I was going to say on that last question, what we're bringing back, one of the phrases that was said over and over is be where your feet are. Hmm. And I think that's something we can bring here. Like even with VBS this week, you know, our focus was those kids, and that's where we were being, where our feet are. And when we go to work, we need to be intentional because we all miss so many opportunities that God is putting before us to either speak to somebody like Judd talked about today or just being the hands and feet of Jesus. And so I think for me, that's where my heart is just trying to be where my feet are in that moment and soaking all that in. Mm-hmm. You want to talk?
Sure. So one of the things that I came back with is going to be really counting the blessings. We have so many big things in our lives that we focus in on of what we don't have or what's not going right, that we kind of get succumb to it. We wallow in it. I shouldn't use big words. So finding those things that happen in our life that are a blessing, even if it's something small, if it's something that can easily be missed, learning to not miss those things. Because, you know, I look at something that we're going through, and it's months long, right? And we're thinking, oh, this is such a horrible thing. I can't believe we're going through it. We can feel like we're a victim in our own world. And then you go somewhere like that, and you see people living in it for years. And they don't look at it as, they're not wallowing in it. I'm going to use that because now I don't know what it is. They're counting those small blessings. They're counting the small things that happen in life, and they're just joyous about it. And knowing that that how many small things, how many small blessings in my life do I miss every day that could be bringing me joy, that could be bringing me hope, and instead I'm focusing on that one negative thing. And I think that's going to be a real, you know, for me, that's going to be the biggest thing I came back with, is changing that mindset and where my focus lies.
Personally, I've been so focused on living my best life on planet Earth that I have forgotten about Jesus. I brought back a lesson. The lesson was, don't focus on how good your life is on planet Earth, because God will give you new life in heaven. And I brought back, just focus on God. Don't focus on bad things in life. Just focus on what God has given you and all your blessings.
Renee, I know you're avoiding the microphone, but go ahead.
Okay, so what did I bring back? Well, the obvious answer is a whole bunch of new friends. That's the first one. The second one, Luke is not here because he lives in Kansas City, but he shared one day in his devotional about what if we got in the Word before we looked at our phones. Well, some days I have a hard time getting up for work on time, so I don't necessarily make the Word before the phone, but at least in the Word every day, which is a good improvement. And then just a renewed sense of joy in serving others.
Yeah.
So one I saw you eyeballing me.
So one of the things they all learned to love about me on this trip is I told them before we went, everybody has to give at least one devotion, and everybody has to pray out loud. Like, you're not going to avoid it. We're going to stretch you. We're going to challenge you. And they all thrived. So it was beautiful to see. So when Haley's looking at me like, I know, I got to talk.
I will. I think some takeaways were really just how much more we can do with less. Like even down there, for instance, the guys worked on Miss Tamara's house and they had, I think she was like 8 years old, their daughter, China, and her thanking you guys just for leveling the floor in her bedroom. Mm-hmm. My kids probably honestly wouldn't even notice if there was a crumb on our floor. And there they are, you know, like just thankful for these little things. And it's just how much blessing we have in our lives that we take for granted. And that went with Nick when he challenged us in his devotion about finding those three blessings each day. So I love coffee. The coffee down there was terrible. It was not good. And we ended up finding out the last day that we were drinking leftover coffee all week, which is probably why it wasn't very good. But anyways, I had to work the next day when we got back, and we have the lovely Coffee Connection kiosk in the hospital. It's fantastic. So I went up there and I ordered a latte, and I just like looked at Lori and I was like, oh my gosh, you're my blessing, like my first one of the day. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't think I've ever like not taken for granted that I can just come and get good coffee when I want it. So blessings each day. And then I think even like we said, we're a very instant gratification world. So it was just nice to like disconnect from that. Like our phones really didn't work well down there. And I thought about how mindlessly, like you said, you wake up in the morning and you just pick up your phone and you scroll it for absolutely no reason. So just, it was freeing to have an entire week of being disconnected. And I know me personally, I've been on my phone less. I've been on my children more, of being on their tech less. And I've been like waking up in the morning and actually intentionally doing my devotion each day. Before bed, you know, I just love my quiet time to do what mom wants in the day, but I'm reading that devotion before I go to bed. You know, and Kate Sogard, who also isn't here, she told us about having a prayer journal and how she had gotten one and started writing in it each day, and it gives you scripture and all of that. And I came home and immediately looked for one, and I ordered one for myself and for Chelsea. And it's like just to take the time, I guess, to just slow down in like the chaos of everyday life and just focus more on him and less on myself. Mm-hmm. Was that enough, Jed?
Any other questions anybody has? Okay, so Andrew is going to love this. We did this down there, thanks to Renee. So if you want to send it down to Nick, we're going to end in last word. So last word is just a word, a short phrase, what this trip meant to you, or what was the most impactful thing for you?
I guess my last word would be unending. I shared this with Judd, but everything we did down there was amazing. But even being home the last couple weeks, there are chains that were broken that I was still tripping over because they were still laying about, but I couldn't see them. And so going away and coming back with those fresh eyes to see that and being able to clear away the obstacles that I would trip on without even thinking about it. I would say if your thought is you're going down for an 8-day trip and then going back to life as normal, don't sign up for this one. This isn't that trip. This trip doesn't end because it continues on with you when you come back.
Good word.
I guess my comment to everyone is that there is no reason that every single person in this room couldn't go. You can do it, and you will be amazed at how you will come back and the bonds that you will have developed. It is just truly unbelievable. You just can't put it into words how much it means to me to be able to be part of this church and to be part of this trip to Abaco.
I think my last word would probably be compassion, because I try to constantly ask God for eyes to see people where they're at, and he surprises me every time because it's not what I think it's going to be. So hearing the stories and really learning about who people are and where they are in their faith or if they know Jesus and having the opportunity to pray for them, not only there, but of course here. So
I think my last word was listening to stories of people and their faith. And my words would be, I will never forget these people and this small group. And my moving forward for church is, and this is unprecedented, I mean, that's what you can find in small groups and communities. Mm-hmm. And there are stories in this group that I thought, wow. And I think you can find those in our own church as well, where people share their stories of their faith, and that strengthens yours. Mm-hmm. So lots of words, but that's my last word.
I guess I would choose perspective, and it kind of goes with everything that I've already said and what they said, but just your perspective's going to change if you go in one way or another, whether it's amongst conversations with each other, the situations you're a part of or the people you interact with, and then just looking internally on how that changes things and when you return and hopefully go again.
I think for me, it would be control and compassion. We talked a lot about control at the gathering hall for various reasons, and many of us up here we like to be in control of our daily lives in every aspect or as many aspects of that as we can be. But we heard stories from the people that we helped work on their homes, but also from the pastor and his wife, Pastor Barrett and his wife there at Kirk of the Pines, how they just relinquished all control and let the Lord guide them in their journey to be missionaries there and to establish a church. And the people of Abaco, you know, they didn't have anything to control. Everything was out of their control, you know, when the hurricane hit and the outcomes of that. And so, you know, I can just give more to the Lord, put it on his plate, not mine, and be faithful in that. And then compassion, just looking at things through a different lens was a goal of mine going on the trip, was to really be where my feet are and see it through their lens, not mine. And, you know, just driving into church today, you know, you see somebody who hasn't mowed their yard. They have a story about why that is or why there's the junk in their yard. So being more compassionate just in my daily life.
For me, I think a good word maybe is hope. After going 2 years in a row now, just be able to go back this year and see some of the changes after last year. And then Judd talked on it a little bit, but being able to go back to Larry and Jenny Saunders' house was pretty neat to see that they were moved in. And you could pull up there and you see one house that, you know, the lawn's all manicured down, very clean. You can tell they took a ton of pride in it. But then you can look around and, you know, there was still a lot of the same stuff hanging around that was there last year. But just probably seeing the growth in the community and just seeing that there was a lot of different buildings up, different houses, things like that that have been completed.
I think really taking away, like we kind of touched on, it's more than a mission trip. Like, I don't think I realized how much it would like the community with, oh my gosh, I hate crying, don't make me do it.
You get used to crying in front of people. I do it all the time.
No, why do you do this to me? But just like the community with these people, like I remember like landing in Abaco and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm stuck here for 8 days. I'm not really close with anyone here but Chelsea. Like, wow. And it's like just to come back and like we're this like kind of close-knit little family. And like it's funny now because Torin, my five-year-old, FaceTimed us down there. And now it's like she comes to church every Sunday and she thinks like half the people up here are her best friends. So just to like see the impact it comes here and just like being able to really dive into like your Jesus walk. And we had like impact books, and on our last day we had to like have themes and phrases, and like what came to me was you can't passively receive what you're not actively pursuing. And so just bringing that home and really putting meaning to that.
So I kind of said mine was be where your feet are, but also community, but just in the sense of like we're not meant to live this life alone, and those people, they needed us, and there are people here that need us too. So I'll keep it short.
Well, since Tyler took mine, I'll use a different one. Thanks, Tyler. So I'm going to use action will be my word of the day, and this is going to be prompted from something Judd told me that I took home and actually told my wife. My kids hate hearing the term. Words are cheap. Action's what matters. And I think you heard that yesterday, didn't you? I use it a lot. But I tend to apply that to a lot in my life. But one thing I realized I wasn't doing enough of is applying that into the faith in my life. And so we were sitting at a table, and I kept saying, I want to do more. I want to do more. And, you know, Chelsea, I think you even mentioned, well, you know, we need to help here. And I said, well, that'd be good. And I said, I just want to do something to help. And Judd, you know, of course, you know, had to use his bright wisdom words and said, well, why don't you? And I don't think he meant anything by it, but it stuck with me. And I realized, why don't I? Yeah, why don't I do this something, you know? And I the term that I use a lot with my kids started ringing in my head, and I go, man, I'm not being a good example if I don't do something here. And so, you know, if you have in your mind, I want to do something, even if it's going on a trip like this or just, you know, doing what Judd said in our mission or his message today of just reaching out to one person, why don't you do it? Put in action. Words are cheap, but your actions will mean everything to somebody. So,
I'd say this trip really opened my eyes, and I've told that to a couple people, but it's true. Before I, you know, just kind of was like, you know, this will be a good way to bond with my father. But now that I have been back for a couple weeks, I've seen that not only is it a good thing for you mentally, but physically, as, you know, trusting in Jesus and loving God, it just changes you. It makes you a better person. I've been smiling a lot more because I've realized, what's the point of being all sad? It takes the same amount of effort as it does to be happy. Like, and being happy and trusting the Lord have been my two things since I've gotten back. And I just really loved going on there with everyone here. Mm-hmm. They showed me that happiness is a good thing, and community is great.
Okay, so my last word is just go, because a hot, sweaty week in Abaco with amazing people like this is better than the best week of work I have ever had here at home.
Yeah, and there was another lady that went, couldn't be with us this morning, but she was really scared to go. She didn't know really anybody. She wasn't sure how she was going to fit in. She was nervous she wouldn't be able to do the work. And I think she defined herself as a wallflower, if I remember right. But to watch her just grow within that week and just come out of her shell, and you can even see it now that we're home, that's hung on, so... I guess my word, I'm going to, I guess, borrow Jake's or rent it for a moment, would also be hope. So this was my third trip to Abaco. And so to see the progress of what our teams have done, like going back to the Saunders home, but seeing what the other teams have done and how these people live with hope, you know, that's, in many ways, that's all they have. And so to see the progress has been really encouraging to me. But also this team, and I shared this with them. So my sister-in-law died a week before I went. So I went with a heavy heart, amongst other things going on in my life. And this team restored so much of me in our time down there. So I am eternally grateful for each of you. So thank you. And celebrate, you should be proud. They represented you very, very well. Any other questions before we... Thank you so much for staying too, by the way. Yes, Ryan.
What happens when the lights go out in the middle of the night? Or when the electricity goes out?
Okay. I know where you're going with this. So, so there's the camp we stay at, there is no air conditioning. Really, the only air conditioning you receive all week is when you're in the vans driving from place to place. And that's even, anyway. So everybody has a fan. And in the dorms, everybody will have a fan by their bed. And there's a huge exhaust fan in, built into the wall. And it sounds kind of like a jet taking off all night. So one night, in the middle of the night, I wake up and I hear nothing. Nobody's snoring. Nobody, like, silence. And I'm exhausted, by the way. And so I'm laying there in the, and I'm like, what is happening? So I start tapping on the bunk ahead, on above me, and I'm like, okay, I can hear that. What's going on? And then it finally dawned on me, like, oh, the generator ran out of fuel. All the fans shut off. So I was telling that story, and Tyler was laughing. He's like, I heard you tapping on that bed. I didn't know what you were doing. Yeah, thought I'd went deaf. All good. Just the power went out. Thanks, Ryan. Any other questions?
Thank you, team.
Yeah, yeah. So one last challenge. Who wants to close in prayer? Yeah, there we go.
Father God, I just thank you that we could come to your house today and worship you and praise you and spend time in prayer and learning more about you. And God, I thank you for every member of this team. Their yes to go and serve you. And I pray that what we bring back will just abundantly multiply in Knoxville and Pleasantville and Pella and the areas that we work in. And I pray that you will give every person in this room the courage to do what Judge challenged us to do today and share with one person about Jesus. Keep us safe throughout the remainder of this day. Amen.
So we're going back, I think it's the second week of June next year. And so if anybody is interested or have more questions, I'm sure all of these people would love to talk to you about it. Age does not matter. Yeah, there's always something. Always something to do. Yeah, you have to be 14. Yeah. But again, thank you each for sticking around and hearing our story and asking the questions. Thank you.